Welcome to Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy Greg Robinson Appreciation Week.
That's a thing. So for those who don't know why, Greg Robinson did the impossible, and one of the five wins that still counts towards his name was one against Notre Dame, an unlikely November Eve, where he managed to beat the Fighting Irish. And thank God he was already going to be leaving, because that would have saved his job otherwise, and Darryl Gross would have made sure of it.
Yeah. Oh, God, I can't even imagine a world where they didn't fire him before that. I never even thought of that. Yeah, that was a game that I delighted in, and I hope that we can delight in a similar game that doesn't involve a coach on his way out, but instead a coach who is just beginning his time here in the lovely Syracuse, New York.
Yeah, I mean, this would, in some ways, this would, like, speed up the pace of things, and I'm not even going to wade into this question again, because last time I suggested a loss might be better long-term than a win, I was crucified. But at the same time, the expectation train will roll if Babers wins this game, even if at the end of the day, it's not against an overly impressive Notre Dame team. Doesn't mean I don't want it. It's just saying that I can see the writing on the wall at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, I would also suggest that you not
write that article that again.
A loss of, yeah. probably not your most popular work among the fan base.
One of my least popular works, actually.
I mean, you have to have something that's your least popular. I mean, by definition. Yeah, I mean, I think a win here, I don't know. It's tough to really know what to make of Notre Dame. Part of me, for full transparency, when I wrote my preseason predictions for college football, I had Notre Dame in my playoff. I was very much in on the Irish and Deshaun Kizer and all their weapons. And their defense is so terrible. It's not unlike Syracuse's defense, except that it has way more talent and might somehow be, like, worse scheme-wise. They've been absolutely toasted by Texas, who has a pretty good offense, but, like, you know, Texas is still finding its way in this new system as Syracuse is, obviously with a lot more talent. Michigan State, which does not have the same kind of explosive offense, but 36 up on them. Duke just beat them at home, and Duke is not very good this year. They lost to Wake Forest, I think, the week before. Undefeated Wake Forest, we should note, but Wake Forest nevertheless. So, I don't know. I think a win over Notre Dame when you're a program like Syracuse or Duke, for that matter, is always good. I think perception is still that Notre Dame is a power player. And they were a good team last year, so I get it. So it'd be a really nice notch in the belt for Babers. I don't think it's on the same level as, like, if he were to beat Clemson or Florida State later in the year.
Do either of those, please.
Yeah, one of those would be fun.
Clemson in particular.
Oh, God. Especially if Clemson beats Louisville. I mean, I don't really want to. I'd like the ACC. And at this point, like, in the season, I think a bunch of one-loss teams will be in the playoffs. But I would like the ACC to continue to get representation in the playoff. But I don't think I want that more than if Clemson were to beat Louisville this weekend and then have its only loss to Syracuse. Their fans would, especially, like, I think if they got to the playoff anyway, their fans would be okay. If that was the reason they missed the playoff, holy shit.
They first of all, they would not make the playoff. Well,
I don't know, because I'm not buying an undefeated Pac-12 winner. Maybe if Washington wins this weekend and they run the table. And I'm starting to, like, move into the Washington bandwagon. I feel okay about being skeptical, but they've looked really good, aside from, like, I think at Arizona is kind of a weird game, and no one actually saw that game, so no one knows how close it was, because it was on Pac-12 Network. I don't know, I think the winner of this weekend is the best chance there, but Big 12 might just, I mean, I don't know if anyone in the Big 12 is going to survive with one loss. Obviously, Oklahoma already has two.
Well, even if they do, and you know, like I kind of waded into this in an article over on the Comeback last week. It was like, even if Baylor does like win at all, like you're gonna win a conference where the second best team is gonna be like 9-3, and like a 9-3 Texas or a 9-3 Oklahoma. Like if Baylor gets through, I just don't know if that team, considering how terribly they schedule in the non-conference, could jump over any one loss conference champ.
It'd be tough to leave them out if they were undefeated, but I also don't see this Baylor team. Like I haven't watched very much of this Baylor team yet.
I
saw
to.
A little bit of Baylor. Yeah, I mean, I saw a little bit of the Oklahoma State game. They don't strike me as the same team as they have been, and these last couple teams haven't made the playoff either. So, I mean, maybe they could do it, but I'm not buying Baylor. I mean, in terms of pure on the field thing, like Art Briles is kind of a warlock, and I don't think Jim Grobe is going to have the same command of that team, or Kendall Briles will have the same command of that offense when it comes to like crunch time decisions in a close team. So we'll see. I think obviously the Ohio State Michigan winner is looking good. Alabama looks pretty much unstoppable through the regular season. And either you know whoever wins this Clemson Louisville game, and then obviously Houston is the specter floating around. And obviously that Louisville Houston game might also be a de facto quarterfinal as well. So there's a lot of football to be played. But yeah, I mean I think I'm trying to remember how we even got here. Oh yeah, Clemson getting left out because they lost to us. I don't know. I don't know how many undefeated champions will be. Maybe I think two. I think two is like the max, and there could be one. It could just be Alabama.
Well, just sign me up for an undefeated Houston getting in over an undefeated Baylor for the fourth spot.
Oh like, yeah, I mean
like
I would
the
have.
Week,
to
but like that. The week, of, like right after the Big 12 says they're not going to expand.
Plus, you'd have like a couple. That'd be really funny. You'd also have some like interesting comparison points, as you'd have Baylor. Playing Oklahoma, obviously, and I don't know that they would beat Oklahoma as easily as Houston. I mean, Houston didn't beat, I wouldn't say easily, but Houston handled them. Houston looked like definitively the better team. And then Houston would have a really nice win over Louisville. And, you know, some decent AAC games, not great, like not as into the Big 12, but Baylor doesn't have that marquee at a conference game, and Houston would have two. So, I don't know who that's not a Baylor fan would support Baylor getting in over Houston. Especially because Houston is such a fun program and Tom Herman is such a fun coach and they have a lot of delightful players. Maybe like anyone in that general region, maybe the Texas schools would be like, well, we can deal with Baylor being who they've been become, but we can't deal with Houston now becoming a legitimate national power. Maybe that, even if they don't make it into the Big 12. Yeah, so a lot of football to be played. I think the playoff picture is kind of shaping interestingly.
I would agree. And then shifting focus a little bit to Syracuse. I know people do tune in for that, believe it or not. Syracuse beat UConn last week. I know it took us 8 minutes to get to that point, but Syracuse did beat UConn last week. It was messy. It was terrifying at times. I, for a second, thought that it wasn't going to happen, but it did. And it actually did on the back of the defense in the second half, which I was stunned by. Dan, were you equally as taken aback by how all that occurred?
A little bit. I mean, the defense has been so maligned this year, and I think to good reason. Like, it's been pretty bad overall. But like we've said, with this cover two system, like with the offense becoming as scary as I think it will be by next year, and we see spurts of it now. It's not obviously clicking at you know the optimal efficiency, and they go on long spurts where they can't do anything. But I think ultimately what this defense is going to try to do is force turnovers, make big plays in crucial times, get the ball back to the offense, hopefully force some quick three and outs at times. It's not going to be a defense that I think ever is a lockdown unit. It's just hard to do with an offense that plays as a high pace as the Syracuse team does and will continue to improve on. Like, you've seen some really good Baylor defenses, but even those defenses will get into shootouts where, you know, they might actually have a decent game and they're giving up 35 points just based on how the game is played. So for them to, I mean, that's kind of how the UConn team went. Obviously, the offense, you know, kind of stalled out for a while there as it has tended to do this year so far in the third quarter, especially after they jumped out to that early lead. But the defense did exactly that. They made you know, the big pitch six, which, you know, just opportunistic. If the defense starts putting points on the board, even if they're giving up some, that's going to be huge. Franklin obviously had the monster game that we've talked about a lot across the internet. Had that huge stop down by the door line on Sheriffs. So that's really what we want out of this defense. It's not going to be a unit that pitches shutouts and is holding opponents to 200 yards total. That's just unrealistic. Maybe it'll happen here and there, but it's not something you can expect when our offense is occasionally going to, you know, have a 45-second drive, storing or not storing. So it does put a lot of pressure on the defense, but when they can make those big plays and those big stops and get the ball back to the offense and pile up points in quick bursts, that's where it's effective. And I think Babers knows that and is really okay with it. And even after, like, the Louisville game, I think he said, like, I think he was very calm about how the defense played, even though they got totally lit up. He gets it. And I think hopefully our fans start to, yeah, and, you know, it's not crazy that, you know, they'd be frustrated based on a couple of these early performances. But I think eventually our fan base will kind of learn to what to expect, because it is so different from the Marone and Schaefer teams, which were very defense oriented.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of times that I think I've had conversations with folks on Twitter, in the comments about, like, adjust your expectations, stop pretending this is going to be a team that resembles any of the previous ones at Syracuse ever. This is a team that, I mean, when I saw the Greg Robinson comparisons coming out of nowhere, when I saw the Schaefer, you know, Georgia Tech comparisons coming out of nowhere, like, they're playing two different games completely. So Schaefer playing his typical brand of football, allowing 56 points, is a monstrosity. Babers' team allowing 56 points isn't, because of the pace of play, and everyone needs to understand that. I think it was a great sign that the defense can still create plays for itself, despite maybe having their, you know, quote unquote edge taken away from them when it comes to, you know, how they rush the passer, how they get into different running lanes, and how they kind of, you know, are supposedly, were supposedly flying all over the field in the Schaefer scheme. The fact that they were still able to create for themselves and actually, you know, help this team, propel this team to victory, and, you know, I mean, between that touchdown and then the big fourth down stop at the goal line, I think were both great signs of the future, especially considering how many guys are injured right now, and the point that I always bring up with people of, you know, how much of a mismatch this personnel is for this scheme right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can only almost compare it to, like, college basketball, where you have, I mean, everyone kind of knows the difference between play styles, where a team that's going to run and gun is going to play games that are in, you know, the 170s, 180s in terms of total points, versus, you know, the old school, like, Wisconsin teams would play games that are in the 80s. It's just a totally different thing. The Syracuse, you know, under Schaefer, Syracuse is playing games in the 40s, total points. Now these games are going to be in the 80s, and it's not like you can expect the same defense. I mean, some teams can expect this. Alabama can expect this, but for Syracuse, you're not going to have the same defense like the best Schaefer defenses in 09, 2010 that were holding teams to like 20 points tops, and then also have a Babers offense that's going to score 40 points. Like, that's just an unrealistic expectation with the talent that Syracuse has access to. And just in terms of just how the game of football is played, you're never going to have, like, those two things. They're very disparate ideas. So it's just a shift in terms of expectations of what a good defensive performance is and what a defense's role is. For Schaefer, and I'm not saying this, I mean, we obviously are very tired of Schaefer, but I think in an ideal world where with a good style Schaefer team, it would have been, you know, the defense is going to win the game. The offense has to put up enough points for you know, just to get the win. Versus with the Babers team, it's the offense is setting the tone. The defense's role is to make get the offense more possessions and more time with the ball. So just a shift in philosophy. It honestly is a preference thing for a lot of people. I know there are probably some Syracuse fans who hate it and wish football was still played, you know, 19-13 rock fights, but for me, I thoroughly enjoy seeing Eric Dungy have a full quarter where he looked like he had never done a football before and still finished with 407 yards. That's fun. I think that's a cool thing. So hopefully that continues, and I think I actually just looked it up. The total points line for the Notre Dame game, I predicted it was going to be 74. It is at 74.5, so yay me. I think it'll go over that. I think we're going to see a lot of points. It's Notre Dame's defense, as we said earlier, quite bad. Syracuse's defense, still pretty bad, I think, despite having a nice performance that they deserve a lot of credit for. And both offenses, I think, are quite capable. So I think if you were at MetLife Stadium, unfortunately I will not be. I will be like 10 miles away at my office. Not even 10 miles away, I don't think, like 8. You should see a lot of points. And if you're going to, I think all things equal, I'd rather have a high scoring game than not, as we bring up every week now. Because that's the thing we can expect now, which is fun.
Yeah, I mean, I know I mention this all the time. Like, it's always, it's still weird to me to see the, you know, like, comments about how fast the Syracuse go and the high flying Syracuse offense and all this other stuff that was just a foreign concept under Schaefer. Like we said a couple weeks ago, for Syracuse fans that are struggling to rectify all this in their minds, pretend this is like a 4-8 Texas Tech team and you'll be fine. It'll all make a lot more sense. You'll be much happier. Maybe even tell yourself it's not your team. Just when the defense is on the field, just plug your ears or close your eyes or whatever you need to do. It's going to take a little bit. I'm willing to wait because I can see that the pieces are already coming together on offense. And even if the pieces are slower to come together on defense, if the offense is clicking, then we can sustain that. Right now, a little more difficult, but I also don't feel that bad for what's happened to us so far. I mean, you take a look at what Louisville's been able to do to better teams. You take a look at what, you know, USF, yes, they lost to Florida State, but they were still able to put up plenty of points against them as well, and they should have a much better defense than we do. I don't feel that bad, and that's not just being, like, blindly optimistic about this team and this coaching staff in particular. It's just more addressing the realities that, you know, we knew this defense was going to struggle. We were delusional about how much so, perhaps, but even if we finish 4-8 this year or 5-7 or whatever, we're going to do it in a way that's at least partially entertaining, and that's better than anything we can say, winning season or losing season, since Doug Marrone left.
Right, and I think it's encouraging looking at like some of the advanced stats. I mean, I think my computer is being stupid and kind of just froze, but I believe I just scrolled past where, in terms of Bill Connelly's S&P ratings, I think our offense is like 36, and this is like, obviously the offense does some really nice things at times, but it is not, and anyone who watches it will tell you, it is not fully functional at all. Like, there are times where this offense goes full quarters, full, you know, 25-minute blocks where it just can't do anything. And obviously that is not what it's going to look like in a year or two. But the fact that it's already, you know, just that far ahead, where I'm guessing last year's offense is probably in the 90s, if not worse. Yeah. So, yeah, they're ranked 36. And the points haven't even totally come along yet, because I think there are red zone issues that need to be addressed. But, like, the jump forward on offense especially is pretty crazy, just based on one off season and a couple games and you know, inheriting a bunch of players that were not recruited for the system, even though, as we've brought up, like, they happen to fit in fairly well, considering all things considered. A lot of that is we happen to land a transfer who turned out to be like a top 10 receiver nationally, I think is fair to say at this point.
Kind of has me worried.
Obviously,
for next
his numbers a little bit. I'm not out on Steve Ishmael, though. I think, and he said this today, I was thinking over the weekend, like, Edetowo really hasn't drawn double teams yet. I don't know what opposing defenses are doing. I don't. Yeah, I get it at the first game. I get that he blindsided Colgate. That's fine. But he's had four straight 100-yard games. He's had two 200-yard games. At some point, you need to double team him. And when that happens, I think Steve Ishmael. I think Steve Ishmael. I'm going to make a bold prediction. I think Steve Ishmael will have at least one 150-yard game this season.
No, I totally buy that.
I was going to say 200. I'm not going to do that because he'll have like a 180 or two. But I think Steve Ishmael will have at least one like huge monster game, and everyone will be like, oh yeah, he's really good. But he was clearly the focus of the defense, and I think I'm just waiting for the shift in the defensive focus to move over, because like Edetowo I don't remember. I can't tell you one snap where I'm like, oh yeah, they're double teaming him. He's gone. That's why he's getting all these one on one downfield throws, and he's just punking cornerbacks for them, which is great. Eventually, that's going to go away. They will start double teaming him, and in that case, I think we're going to see Ishmael get a lot of favorable matchups, and I think we'll see more Brizzly, more Irv, who will get room to work. And then I'm really excited because I think that might overall be a good thing, as much as I do enjoy watching Edetawo really kind of just destroy people. Even if they start double-teaming, he's going to have a 1,500-yard year. I mean, there's, like, no way that doesn't happen.
Well, I did love the Diaco excuse about what happened to Jamar Summers of, like, oh, well, it was a size mismatch. Well, like, so your 5'8 corner, like, does he inhabit a niche in college football of, like, only covering receivers under 6 feet tall? Like,
yeah. Amba's not that big. Like, he's big. He's a possession receiver for sure. But he's like, he's 6'2". He's not 6'5". He's not Calvin Johnson.
He uses his size well. But, like, yeah, it's not like don't write excuses for the fact that your all-conference corner got lit up the entire game. I mean,
yeah,
it was embarrassing. And it was the fact that he never made any adjustments was even funnier. I think the Ishmael point, you know, is a good one in, you know, the sense that another thing we've talked about before is that because of the routes, like, Ishmael doesn't run these, you know, quick veers, the veers in the shoots as this offense, you know, kind of runs on. He runs those intermediate routes by and large, and those take a little more time. The offensive line's been banged up, so Dungy doesn't have time to throw those, to let those develop, and that's how you get this situation. It's also worth pointing out that, you know, this offense is running like this with only half of it. Again, people forget that Babers runs, while it puts up gaudy passing numbers, it's a run-first offense. Now he's only running half of that offense because we're not running the football pretty much at all. We just patently gave up on it, I think, after the first half against UConn. I forgot the full breakdown from the play-calling article, but, yeah, we didn't really even bother trying to run the ball in the second half other than some spots here and there. And if we're still putting up these numbers with half of an offense, I'm very pleased for what will happen when the other half shows up.
Yeah, and I think that is an offensive line thing primarily. I do trust, I don't know that we have like a superstar running back on the team, but I think we've seen enough bursts where I trust that these running backs get the job done. I think the O-line, hopefully it comes along this season and starts to develop. But even if not, I will say the one positive is that I mean, it's not positive that people are getting hurt, but the offensive line has gotten forced into where a lot of guys are playing meaningful minutes. And while the running game hasn't been good at all, I think they've all done, no pun intended, a pretty passable job in protection. Like, there hasn't been one time where, even in Louisville, which totally overwhelmed Florida State's offense, the defensive line had a huge game. You know, I don't think Syracuse looked any worse for the wear than the Noles did in that department. So I think we're getting a lot of guys' experience. I think there will be, obviously, recruiting will help because it seems like, based on what we've brought in so far, the Babers' ideal offensive line is a little different than the Lester, McDonald, whomever offensive line, if there was a recruiting strategy there, which is a legitimate question to have. I think all those things will help that improve. But that is definitely, I think, the problem area on the offense. And they're still making it work because Dungy has a pretty quick release. We do have these routes. That's why Irv Phillips is a million catches, because he is almost always going to be open somewhere, even if it's for a 4-yard gain. I mean, if that's going to become the de facto running game for the year because the offensive line is better in pass protection on those quick throws than it is getting a push on the run, and you got to get your 4 or 5 yard chunks that way, I mean, so be it. Like, it's not ideal, but I think it's workable, especially once we get into, like, the middle of the ACC and we're not playing Louisville's and South Florida's, which I think would probably be the number four team in the ACC Atlantic behind the Big Three.
Yeah, look at that. Al Groh actually got something right when he said that those are runs, because that's what they are. Sorry, I was focusing in on one part of the broadcast against USF where Al Groh was talking about the fact that they were runs, and he was, like, being a little contrarian about, like, what was a pass and what was a run, and it really doesn't effing matter because it's all about gaining yards. And, like, even if
Al Groh really sees it, man.
I mean, yeah, I mean, he was being like a Dino Babers offense truther, and I was just kind of, like, confused by it. but it's fine.
I mean, they're not like, that's not supposed to be what the running game is, because like we've watched like a decent amount of, you know, a really good Bowling Green team, and they ran the ball like any other team runs the ball just well. But I guess, I mean, that's what's done at work this year, and that's fine. I mean, you were going to adjust and make these things happen as they come here.
Yeah, and that's fine. You know what, like you said, the amount of guys we've been able to plug in on short notice, the amount of guys we've been able to get, you know, starting type experience. I think guys like Colin Byrne, like, are great. Like, I don't really know at this point, like, is Byrne better than Emmerich? Maybe. Like, and now we kind of get to find out in real time. I mean, if we adjust our expectation to see, this season is about, let's see what we got, and let's see what Babers likes of the assets on this team. I don't really consider, like, there's very few outcomes of this year that I would be supremely disappointed in, because I already think that we've grown by leaps and bounds as a program. I think that there's a lot of bad habits that this team needs to be shaken of, and Babers has already, you know, gone to work and then some on addressing them. The fact that the offensive line, again, gets to have this real-time, you know, kind of coming-of-age moment, and we really get to plug in, see who's going to be the future, and I don't understand how anyone could really be down about the prospect of that.
No, it's like it's the Dino sandbox year where he gets to experiment. He's probably having, like, I'm sure it's kind of frustrating to be back at Spur One after you were winning, obviously, smaller conference, but you're winning MAC championships and, you know, competing with Tennessee. But I think at another point, like, the expectations are kind of reset to where, you know, he just has to build things up to where they can. Next year they get raised a little bit, and you want to start showing, like, meaningful results, even though that might come this year. Like, who knows what BC can do against his team, or Wake Forest can do against his team. So we'll see.
BC, nothing. Wake, something.
Maybe. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, Wake, I guess, you know, they're 4-0, so they deserve something. They beat... They have a second, like, degree win over Notre Dame now, so that's good for them. But I think this is, like, it's honestly a sandbox year. So he gets to play around, see what players work, see what players don't, find, you know, in real time the needs in recruiting, and get to make some, you know, just... I've had way more fun this year than I have in since, like, the end of 2013, so I'm not complaining.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I think that's a good place to go for halftime. I know we kind of talked about UConn. I think we talked about that game enough. I think this was good to kind of table set for the Notre Dame game. But Dan, what have you been drinking over the course of the last week?
Unfortunately, not much, because I've been on antibiotics for a couple days. Yeah, nothing serious. Just, like, don't want to, you know, go crazy. I did have a couple, like, one or two beers here and there during the debate. I had a Southern Tier Tangier laying around in my fridge, and, like, I love pretty much everything Southern Tier does. For some reason, the Tangier I just can't get into, even though it's, like, right in my wheelhouse. You know, it's a session IPA. It has, like, a lot of fruit notes, and for some reason, I just don't think it balanced as well, which is weird, because, like, I like pretty much all the rest of their IPAs. But that's, like, the thing I drank during the debate, because I didn't want to drink anything that had more than, like, 4% alcohol. So... hopefully I'll be off of these soon and can get back to it. And then I'll probably break into the fall beers.
Yeah.
Because we're getting there. It's like, it's in the 60s all week.
I was gonna say, it's definitely pumpkin time for you. We officially hit the mark. Well,
yes.
Basically.
Yes.
Once it hits October 1, Saturday, we'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, now that it's basically been in like, legitimate fall weather for an extended period of time here, so, yeah, I feel okay about it. It really, we totally bypassed the 70s. It went from, like, the mid-80s for, like, a week, like, weirdly late into September, and now it's just, like, 63 every day, which is fine. I actually don't mind that weather at all, so.
Lucky you guys. It was 2 days ago at my house, and I'm in a beach city, it was 102 degrees.
Huh.
I was not a fan. James wasn't a fan either. It was, I honestly, you walked outside anywhere in Los Angeles and you felt like, even in the beach cities, and you felt like you were just walking around the subway circa August 1.
Oh.
That was the entire city for like 2 days. It was, I didn't understand what the hell was going on. This is not the weather I signed up for. Just, again, not a fan.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know about your James, but we all know Boeheim's theory on weather and perfect weather, and 102 ain't it, so.
Well, considering my James is a small black dog who does not like being outside in any weather outside of the, like, 73 to 78 range. Yeah,
So it is
Jim Boeheim, exactly. Perfect. Way to keep in character, James. Way to keep in character. All right. Some quick things from me in terms of drinking. I had Beechwood's Melrose IPA, one of their staple bottles that they put out. Always excellent. Had a Monkish Fruit Cart. Sour Ale they put out a couple different times this year. Only made, I think, the first round. They made about 150 bottles. Second round, I think they made 400. Got one both times, which was great. Because again, it's an excellent beer. Also had a Frucht Yumberry from the brewery. It's their Berliner Weiss that they had a couple different fruited variations. I know I've had this one, the apricot one. I didn't have the blueberry because I hate blueberries. And then they had one other version I can't remember at the moment. Also had Same Tree from Monkish. It was a fruited ale with these really special nectarines that are grown in Central California. So yeah, it wasn't an overly drink-centric week, but still got to enjoy some stuff. I'll have plenty more next week, I am sure of it.
If we beat Notre Dame, I might just say screw it, and we will enjoy some. I will force myself to
deal
enjoy
with
something.
The consequences later.
Oh yes.
Actually, if you're going to avoid things that are, you know, like over like 4%, you should just pound Guinness, just to thank Notre Dame for the win.
That's an option.
It's an option because Guinness is one of the most easily drinkable beers, just by way of alcohol content.
This is true. That is an option. Or just an entire 15-pack of All Day IPA. Because what's the worst?
You can do that too. Because All Day IPA is also under 4%. But one game that I alluded to Dan before we started, it's called When Will Clay Helton Get Fired? I know that this program, like many others, enjoys shitting on USC. I actually don't as much as others. I have no problem with USC finding success. I don't think Dan does either. I think it's just hilarious to watch them fail because they do it in such a unique way.
Yeah, I totally – that's not like one of the pet programs which I just hate. It is, I have no feelings for USC, really. I actually think it'd be kind of fun if they were really good again, just to balance out, like, the college football world, which has been so, Alabama and Urban Meyer centric for so long. But they just, like, it's, they annoy me because they squander their unique place in the world so poorly, so badly for, like, over and over and over. Like, they've made so many hires recently, and they just don't work.
Spectacularly fail. And I think, you know, that's the... Now, you know, I think is Clay Helton going to get fired on the tarmac conversation got started after they lost the Alabama 52-6 in the opener. But now we're here in week 5, and they're facing Arizona State in a game I wanted to go to. I probably won't end up going to. But his tickets are dirt cheap because when the Trojans are bad, no one cares. That's kind of LA fandom in a nutshell. When they're bad, no one shows up. But yeah, they're cruising toward, like, you look at the schedule, and we're going to play this game. When will Clay Helton get fired? Keeping in mind they're already 1-3 and 0-2 in the Pac-12. Dan, do you have the Trojan schedule up?
I'm pulling it up now. Here's the thing. I think they fired Lane Kiffin on the tarmac because Lane Kiffin is an asshole. Like, I don't think they would have done that to a nicer person. And I think Clay Helton, for, you know, I don't know if he's a good football coach, doesn't look like it, but I also thought he was put into, like, an impossible situation. I don't think he's an asshole. So I'm going to say they won't fire him on the tarmac. I think they might tell him, let's say if they lose, like, 2 of the 3 to Colorado, Arizona, and Cal, which I kind of think they will, because Colorado's pretty good. And Cal is Cal, and they're tough to deal with. And Arizona is a road game. We just saw Washington struggle there. This schedule is, like,
look
impossible.
At this schedule, like, this team's going 3-9.
like what's gonna happen is Helton's gonna pull a G route. He's gonna they're gonna be 3-8 and they're gonna beat Notre Dame. But here's what's gonna happen. So that's gonna happen, and everyone's gonna be like, you know what, this is just, you know, we sorry for Clay. He probably shouldn't have ever gotten the job. Nice guy, whatever. Go rides out in the sunset, gets carried off the field by his team after winning his third game. Literally the same exact thing that happened to Greg, except he even had the Cincinnati game that no one ever remembers happened the week after. But I'm gonna say that over in Baton Rouge, Dakota leads the Tigers what are they? They 2-2 now? Yeah, so he leads them. They're going to finish 9-3 with their only other loss to Alabama. They're going to decide that they're going to go hire Tom Herman because, like, LSU, you cannot mess that up. You have to give Tom Herman whatever he wants. He is basically in your backyard in Houston. Like, that is such an obvious fit. I don't think LSU could possibly mess that up.
Unless
we'll
Tom
see.
Herman says no, which he will.
I just don't know how many better jobs he's going to get. But that's another discussion, totally. USC then goes and hires Ed Orgeron, who they turned down the first time when he led them to a 6-2 record. Yeah. I thought of this like in the 10-minute lead-up to this show, and when I realized we're going to probably talk about this, and that's my dream scenario.
Fair enough. So... You think that is he fired after the UCLA game, and then he wins the Notre Dame game?
Yeah, it's tough to know. Like, they could fire him at any point, and they just might not want to deal with hiring an interim, where they're basically hiring an interim for the interim, because like it does seem like Helton's not long for this job, so it's almost like he just inherited the extra year. I don't know when the actual firing is done, but I just can't see a situation where they make this work and when you're USC and you've been bringing in like top five classes, I don't know how you can justify a season that is going to go as poorly as this one looks.
Yeah, and I mean, like, looking at this schedule, if they lose to Arizona State on Saturday, they're going 2-10. Like, I shit you not, look at this schedule and tell me where the wins come. Because they're not there. They're not.
It's tough. Yeah.
They're not there. Colorado is going to beat you. At Arizona sounds like hell on earth. Like, Cal is going to beat you. Oregon, it's their homecoming. They're going to beat you. No, sorry. It's USC's homecoming. So Oregon's definitely going to beat you there. And then you're at Washington, at UCLA. And then you're facing Notre Dame, probably fighting for Brian Kelly's job. You're going 2-10. This is going to be the worst USC season ever.
Yeah, I think the most optimistic look is they somehow sweep. They somehow win three of the next four, and then I don't know how they win any of the other ones.
You still go 4-8.
Except for maybe they beat Notre Dame. Like, maybe they can scrounge 5 wins. And, like, 5 wins cannot be good enough at USC, no matter what the situation is. Because they've been recruiting so well. Like, they're in that top echelon of teams. They're one of the only teams... that, and I know recruiting rankings are whatever, they're one of the only teams who a major recruiting service has given a number one class that isn't named Alabama. I think they might be the only one. ESPN gave USC the number one class, I think, 2 years ago. Alabama has pretty much swept every one of those for, like, 7 years now. It's like, they have so much talent there, and I know their numbers aren't all the way back from the Reggie Bush thing, which is crazy how much of an impact that's had.
But
it's still crazy. But they still have so much talent,
yeah.
And it's just being squandered so badly.
If USC loses the next three games, Helton is fired right after the Arizona game.
The bye week.
He's fired in the bye week. If they manage to win two of the next three, which is possible, I'm not overly impressed with. I mean, ASU looked good against Cal, but it's not that hard to do. If they win two of the next three, I think he survives until they lose against UCLA. And then I think he gets fired, and then he loses the Greg Robinson Notre Dame game. So that's my prediction. But now I want to play very quickly an additional game of how many games the Seahawks have to lose for Pete Carroll to come back.
I don't see it. I think they're probably going to be given a lot of leeway this year because it seems like Wilson might have a lingering issue, which is going to be
they're
a problem.
Fire. I mean, how many games the Seahawks?
You're saying he's going
to
leave?
Games the Seahawks have to lose for Pete Carroll to just fucking leave?
Oh, I don't think so. I think he's out like a couple more years. He seems fairly content there.
I just feel like he'd be fairly content at USC, where he's a living legend and the guy gets a standing ovation every time he shows up at the Coliseum.
That's true. I wouldn't put the most USC thing possible is for them to eventually hire Pete Carroll again. I just think now is too soon. I could totally see it being after the failed Ed Orgeron regime.
I'm seeing like 5 or 6 losses more on the schedule at least for the Seahawks. I mean, this just seems like the logical move for Pete
Carroll. Their offensive line is so bad.
It's really bad. This is the logical move for Pete Carroll.
Yeah, I'm not saying not this year, but if you ask me in like 2017, 2018, I think that's definitely in play.
Also like what, 66?
So he's going to take USC as a retirement job and no one's ever going to have the heart to fire him there?
He's going to coast it out.
I mean, he probably love that. I don't know. Like the 20,000 ravenous USC fans that show up to every game probably wouldn't love that, but
oh Christ! All right. On that note, back to Syracuse stuff. As fun as that was, so Notre Dame, they fired Brian Van Gorder. They should have, but now they replace him with Greg Hudson, who was a god awful defensive coordinator at Purdue. Dan, do you see anything being different for them first in week? This week against Syracuse, and then do you see anything being different for Notre Dame going forward?
Not really. I don't know what you can do like mid-season. I think especially on the defensive side, like you have the personnel you have. You're not going to make a mid-season shift in total defensive philosophy. Like your staff is built a certain way because that's what Van Dorder wanted. So clearly Hudson, you know, obviously he's done the DC job. He wasn't particularly good at it. Purdue's an impossible job at this point. But you can still field, in the Big Ten, you can field like a competitive defense and just not be able to score. I don't think that was Purdue's problem. I don't have the stats in front of me, but like they were getting beat in every facet.
I mean, the defense actually got worse every year he was there.
Okay, so
there
you go.
They were 111 the last year he was there.
And he what, 3 years, I think?
3 years somehow.
That's impressive.
It's also Purdue.
Yeah, it is also Purdue. I don't expect a huge shift. Like, I don't expect Notre Dame's defense to magically turn it around. Certainly not this week. I think we said this after week one. It just so happens that Notre Dame has seen a similar team. The Texas Longhorns run a very similar system. Also have big receivers. We don't have a John Burt who runs, it seems like a 3.940 and runs directly past everyone. But we have some big receivers who are talented. A solid quarterback who I guess is playing after some just like weirdness where it does seem at this point like Babers was just going full gamesmanship and acting like Dungy's hurt when he might not be.
That was so dumb.
Which is, it's so dumb and I also kind of support it.
Yeah,
just as it riled up everyone for like a day and a half. Including us, like we were totally in on that too. The systems are very similar. Maybe that gives Notre Dame a slight edge in that it won't be totally blindsided by some of the things. Texas also dropped 50 on them and could do whatever it wanted. And Duke didn't have the same level of success, but Duke's offense, which is probably the worst it's been in like 3 or 4 years, and is playing with I'm not sure. Is there a quarterback a freshman, or is he just his first? I think he's a freshman, right?
I just know he's not Thomas Cirque.
Yeah, well, Cirque got hurt. I'm pretty sure the replacement's either a freshman, but either way, he's not someone with like a wealth of experience under his belt. And he played very well at Notre Dame. Nevada, you can throw that out. Nevada's not very good. They just lost to the said Purdue Boilermakers in the last couple of weeks. Yeah, I was pretty sure. And Michigan State, who looked like they, you know, had never seen a football before against Wisconsin this past week, put up 36 on Notre Dame 2 weeks ago. So, like, yeah, and, like, looked incredibly good doing it, and then Wisconsin almost shut them out. And Wisconsin's good, but, like, Wisconsin almost lost to Georgia State, so I'm not, like, all the way in on the Badgers.
Yeah, no, I'll forgive that one. Look ahead.
I'm fine forgiving it. Yeah, I'm fine forgiving it. But like, I don't think the Badgers are. I'm not sure they're a top 10 team. We'll find out this weekend for sure.
A top 10 team, and Michigan State's clearly not a top 10 team. So now the strength of their wins.
Well, see, if they beat Michigan at the Big House, then they are.
Top 5 team. But if they get blown out by Michigan, then they're exactly what we thought they were, which is a fringe top 25 team if they can get the Rubric schedule.
Yeah, and the schedule just killed them. It might kill them this year. So yeah, Notre Dame's defense, I think it's as bad as people think. Van Dorder went from Kelly basically like saying, "Oh, nothing's going to happen," to totally fired, you know, in less than 24 hours between it was more than 24 hours. It was Saturday to Monday. But it just, I don't know. I think Syracuse will move the ball on them. I don't know that they will win a shootout because I do think that Deshaun Kaiser's faced like a weird amount. He's catching like a weird amount of the blame, even though he's been very good. Obviously, he didn't handle the late game situation in Michigan State very well, but it would also be nice if his defense didn't give up 40 points a game. So I expect Notre Dame to win a shootout here, but I do think I don't think the Syracuse offense will have much trouble moving the ball on them.
No, not at all. We'll get the predictions at the end, but to me, this game's going to come down to whether or not the Syracuse defense can make stops, because Notre Dame's defense has proven they can't. If SU decides to finally start finishing off some drives, that'll obviously get us into a bit of a upper echelon in terms of offensive production. It'll have us fighting above our weight a little bit more, and I think right now we're still kind of fighting accurate to our weight. Beating a similar-ish UConn team by 7, losing to much better USF and Louisville teams by 20 or more. These are all things that are par for the course right now because the scheme is yet to kind of help us catch up. I mean, it's not going to this year, or at least it's very unlikely to this year. Next year, that's when things click. That said, this Notre Dame team seems a little downtrodden, seems a little depressed, and is not in the state of mind that a team full of 4 and 5 stars would necessarily be, in a neutral site game against a team like Syracuse. This is where, again, the scheme, if it decides to perform to its abilities, can help make it up. But because we don't have a running game, instead of relying on, you know, the pass and the run as we would have otherwise, we're going to be relying on the passing game and then the defense. I think last week's effort was a great morale boost for the Syracuse Orange defense, but there are a lot better weapons, and they're going to move at a faster pace with a more athletic quarterback, Deshaun Kaiser, this week for Notre Dame, than anything UConn could have done. And I think that's going to be their undoing, as much as I'd love to see SU kind of, you know, either win or obviously, you know, take a close loss on national TV that at least announces to people that this offense is progressing a little bit more. Because the first question I've gotten from a lot of opponents in my Q&As that I've been doing with teams is, you know, where are all the points? We see the yardage, but where are those points coming from?
Yeah, and I think that's going to be the major concern. Like, the yardage that Syracuse is putting up is far outpaced like what you'd expect the point totals to be. And that's been an issue for Syracuse for a couple of years now throughout multiple systems. Getting into the end zone has been much tougher than moving the ball between the 20s. So hopefully that's something that, and part of that problem last week was the missed field goals, which were pretty out of character for Murphy, who's been quite reliable.
I don't know what it was. I mean, the wind maybe, but it wasn't even like they didn't look like they were carried by the wind. It just looked like some bad kicks. He said he slipped on the one. Looking at some bad kicks. I also found that the lack of going for it on fourth down was another surprising wrinkle last week.
Yeah. That was surprising, especially considering how often he'd done it in previous games. Watching Murphy, I almost thought like it might have been a turf issue. I don't know. The rent doesn't have like a particular like. It's not like we always hear about the rent turf being bad or anything like we do some places. But it didn't seem like anyone else like out there slipping. Usually, it wouldn't just be the kickers that you noticed it with. So I don't know. Could just be a bad day, which happens. He's allowed a bad day, I guess. But overall, he's been really good, so I'm not worried about him in general. I just think the team just needs to find what works in the red zone. I think the alchemy of the offense kind of changes in terms of like the weapons that you use and the plays that worked, and clearly they haven't quite found what works for them in that area. Hopefully we will, because I mean, I trust Babers as an offensive mind, and I'm sure he's working on it, because that's definitely been, aside from like the Raider offensive line issue, I think that's been something that's plagued Syracuse for a couple of years now.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, people were, I mean, this was when Schaefer defenders were still a thing. Schaefer defenders were pretty psyched about, I think, what, through like three or four games last year, we had 100% scoring percentage in the red zone. People were like super jazzed, forgetting the fact that like we had less red zone trips than almost any other team. We settled for field goals like 75% of the time we were in the red zone. Now we still don't have a ton of red zone trips. I think it's the only saving grace here is that we're scoring a lot from outside the red zone. If I had to choose, I really don't care. Like, it's fine. If we're going to score on a 40-yard touchdown every time, that's great. And if Dungy can hit those throws, and to be honest, he was hitting those spots a lot against UConn, and even some of the ones that didn't end up connecting were not his fault. I think, you know, people underestimate just how well Dungy played on Saturday. I think he could have easily had, you know, another 75, 80 yards and a couple touchdowns. If Turf Monster and a few cases of dropsies didn't show up. I think if that Dungy shows up, and whatever this weird injury or not was, I think we've got a real shot. I think there's a lot of... If he can do that, if the offensive line can just keep him protected and against a team that can't rush the passer, it would seem likely that they can for at least part of the game. This is going to be a fun one, but like you said, it's going to depend a little bit on red zone scoring. And like I said, I think it's going to depend a lot on if the defense can, you know, turn the field over a couple times or at least once, just to create those extra opportunities for this offense.
Yeah, if we can force the turnovers like we did last time we played Notre Dame at MetLife and actually score off of them, which we did not do last time we played Notre Dame at MetLife, I think we'd be in very good shape.
That was the frustrating part about that last Notre Dame game in MetLife.
It was
everyone said you guys weren't that close, and I kept saying afterwards, no, but really look at the box score. If we actually had an offense, we were right there.
It was 31-15. It was a two-touchdown game, and there was like five opportunity, like golden opportunities for Syracuse to score touchdowns, but they failed to do it. Obviously, you have to score touchdowns to score touchdowns. Like, it's not like you assume that they are given to you, but Syracuse was so, like, if they score on one of them, it's a one-touchdown game, and then, you know, it's hard to argue that that's not a close game. If they had an average offense, they probably win it, honestly. So, yeah, that was a much closer game than most people probably remember. It was very frustrating because it, like, up until the, like, mid-fourth quarter, it seemed like Notre Dame, like, Syracuse was a play or two away from, like, cutting it down to a one-touchdown lead, and then anything can happen, and just refused to just make that happen. One of the many frustrating moments of the 2014 season.
And I mean, I would never write a post about ranking those frustrating moments, but if I did, that would definitely be up there. As would the idiotic 16-6 loss to Clemson.
Oh, yep, that did happen. If only we had Zach Mahoney back.
Yeah, if only Zach Mahoney had shown up and managed to run for 400 yards. But anyway.
Shout out to Zach Mahoney. If he does play this weekend, beware Notre Dame. He's going to get one of these wins at some point.
He is, actually. And that's even coming from someone who, like just about all of us, defends to the death that Dungy is the only decision quarterback right now when both sides are healthy. Dan, as we wrap up here, I know we're both kind of trending toward a loss, but prediction, what do you see happening? How do you see it happening? And the final score.
I'm going to take Notre Dame in a shootout. I think it will be a pretty close game through into the mid-fourth quarter. I think Notre Dame will pull ahead late. I think Kaiser will probably throw for like 450 yards and four touchdowns. I think Dungy will probably throw for like 350 yards and three touchdowns, if assuming he plays. If not, I think Zach Mahoney will just unleash a love some lovely Mahoney magic on Notre Dame. I have a 49-35 Notre Dame win. So lots of points, lots of fun for the whole family.
Is that a push with the over?
What is that, 49-35? No, I think that's over, right?
What's the over-under at, 74?
74-75, yeah, 84. So easy over, which I am going to be looking into putting some shekels on going forward. And that'll be a Syracuse cover, because the line is right around 10 everywhere now. It's opened at like 12 or 13, and most of the money is on Syracuse this weekend.
Very nice. I am predicting even further over. I'm going with a 52-41 final. That'll be a fun game to watch. I got Notre Dame winning, pulling away in the fourth quarter. I think Notre Dame does it's just one of those games where they kind of stay just enough ahead. SU just squanders just enough opportunities to score. I still think that they managed to get rid of some of their red zone issues. I think that even if they can't run the ball, Dungy finds ways to place the football exactly where it needs to be, which is in Ahmed Atallo's hands more often than not. I see a similarly fast start to the last couple of weeks, followed by some squandering on the part of the defense, but not in the like long game. This takes a full half to tie it back up. Format that UConn used, I see it much more looking like a USF game where they start kind of figuring out we're doing on offense, then their offense just lays waste to our defense for a quarter. So we're probably looking at something in the like 28-21 range near halftime, and then Notre Dame just kind of keeps us at arm's length for the rest of the game. Maybe we force a turnover, but you know it's not enough to make the difference we need. And unfortunately, we suffer a loss, but not without entertainment value and not without the rest of the nation really kind of seeing that. Yeah, we're going to lose some games this year, but we're going to be entertaining and interesting in doing so, and watch out in the future.
Yep, and I think if you're going to lose on national television, I think that is the optimal way to do it. Say, oh, Syracuse is a lot of fun. Because like you've been talking about those like bad Texas Tech teams. They're bad Texas Tech teams, but like people watch those games because they're fun. Like, why wouldn't you want to rather be that than like some rock fight, you know, bad... what's a team that's bad and doesn't
Minnesota.
Score any points?
Just like we did 2 weeks ago.
No one wants to watch a bad Minnesota team.
Yeah, you want to watch a bad Minnesota team, bad Iowa State team. Like, no, nobody cares about those teams. People stay up until 2 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast to watch Cal.
Right, I was going to say, like a 4-8 Cal team? 4-8 Cal is going to store 38 points and lose by 20. It's going to be great. Jared Dawson had drafted by off one of those seasons. And then not know where the sun rises. Eric Dungy, please make sure you know all basic like facts about, you know, just general life before you go into the NFL.
Too.
Especially if your team's on Hard Knocks.
Anyway, Dan, anything else before we go? I know it's been a whirlwind episode of fun and frivolity.
Not the deepest week, but I think there are pretty consistently good games. I'm hoping I'm going to be out and about on Friday night, but I'm hoping to catch most of the Stanford-Washington game if possible, which it might be the one I'm looking forward to most, which, you know, if I don't get to see it, whatever, I'll try to get the main points. But I think that one is going to tell us a lot. I think Michigan and Wisconsin is going to tell us a lot. I think it's overall like there's going to be something good at most points of this weekend, which is always what you look for.
I would agree. Roll a damn card. So for Dan and John, I'm John. And you've been listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. Be sure to rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, on whatever other service. I don't know. Maybe we're on Android. Could be the case. Go Orange this weekend.
Go Orange.